Trying to cover all of James Franco's recent projects as an actor, director, writer, teacher, musician, and artist would probably take up the rest of today's show and possibly the rest of the week, so I'm going to concentrate on just two of them. His first novel, Actors Anonymous, which has just been published by Little A, New Harvest, and his film adaptation of William Faulkner's novel, As I Lay Dying, which is currently playing at the AMC Empire 25 on West 42nd Street. Welcome to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, this is a novel. You have published short stories. But do you really think of this as a novel? It's rather experimental. It could also be seen as a collection of short stories or almost essays at times.
You're right. And I like that it doesn't fit any category. But I also like calling it a novel and then having people look at it and say, wait, this isn't quite what I expected when you say novel. Because that's one of, you know, that's something that I'm interested in breaking form, in exploding form, and also I'm interested in bringing different mediums and disciplines together. And this book does both of those things. You know, it's a novel or it's a piece of literature, but the subject is acting and performance. And so in that way, and film, and so it brings...
And celebrity.
Yeah, and so it brings a lot of things together.
Well, its title, Actors Anonymous, obviously is a play on Alcoholics Anonymous, and the book is structured as a series of 12 steps and 12 traditions, just as AA is. Do you consider acting addictive, something that has to be overcome?
No. So I certainly took on certain aspects of the recovery book form. And I did that for several reasons, not really because I think acting is an addiction or not, because maybe it is, but I didn't want to explore that. What I was really trying to get at is in recovery programs, once someone gets over the addiction, they're not using whatever they're addicted to, drugs, alcohol, sex, whatever. Usually these programs, I think, have the person turn to their own lives and look at what was contributing to the addiction. They say that the addiction was just a symptom of deeper problems. And so that's what I'm trying to access through this recovery book format. So it's a way of looking at life through acting.
Well, the internet movie database lists 14 credits for you as an actor just for 2013.
That seems like a lot.
This book mixes first-person narration with poetry, articles, film script dialogue, emails, journal or blog entries, as you suggested you wanted to mix things. How much should I assume that these first-person narrators are speaking for you?
I would say they speak for me as much as, you know, any narrator or character in a fictional piece speaks for the author. So obviously they all come from me. They all come from my fingers and brain, more or less. But I very pointedly did not write a memoir. You know, this is not nonfiction. This goes in the fiction category. So I'm writing about, I engaged with another part of my life, my acting life and my film life, and brought it into my writing life. But I was using it to create atmosphere and to create characters, not to write a tell-all or a confessional kind of memoir about my own life.
Although the first chapter is a series of musings and opinions on acting and actors, and you write specifically about Jack Nicholson, Marlon Brando, Steve McQueen, and others. Do you actually analyze performances and careers of other actors to decide what you want to do
yes.
and what you shouldn't do on the screen?
Oh, you mean in the book or just on my own?
Well, in both cases.
Okay.
I would assume that some of this just comes out of things that you've been thinking about.
I would say yes, a lot. There's some chapters that are lists of statements or musings. And I like to think of those as a kind of performance. I even say that in one of the chapters, that it's sort of like a monologue. And even the the book can be viewed as kind of a monologue.
Well, step one states we admitted that life is a performance, that we are all performers at all times, and that our performance had left our control.
Yes. So
that's true for more than just actors, I'm assuming.
Right. So that's the other side of, or the other reason I use the recovery book format, where I wanted to talk about acting and performance and celebrity and all of that in specific ways, you know, ways that are specific to, you know, what I know about the movie life and the acting life. But then the next part of that, I wanted it to expand or people be able to extrapolate from that and apply what's called acting in here to just living. That in that sense, it's as if every day we all do a mini performance.
Did you draw upon experiences from your own life for some of these stories, like working at McDonald's? Did you ever do that?
Of course.
Or like any volunteer. At a school for disabled kids?
Like any writer, I, you know, pull from what I know. I learn like any actor, you know, when I'm playing a character. I pull from my own emotions. I pull from what I know. That's what I do. I'm not going to pull from what I don't know. And so I did work at McDonald's.
What were you doing?
At McDonald's?
Yeah. Flipping burgers or
no,
at the
no,
cashier?
No, they did not trust me with that. Yeah, I was the cashier.
They didn't trust you. They trusted you with money, James.
Well, I guess so. I didn't steal, so. But it was easier. I'm sure it's easier to screw up the hamburgers than the money. And so there are aspects of working there that I put into the book, but the character that works at McDonald's in the book is not me.
Step three of Actors Anonymous is turned our will and our performances over to the great director. So do you see directors as the high power?
No, that's a way of, again, trying to kind of transpose this idea of acting, film, directors onto life. So in a normal recovery book, that the great director would be, you know, a higher power or something like that. And so it's just a way to kind of try and make a click in the reader's mind to say, wow, how much of life is imposed on me? How much of life is my decision? And who I am is not some foregone conclusion. I make decisions every day that add up to who I am. What I wear, what I say, how I talk, who I talk to, who I hang out with, where I work. Some of this is imposed on us in some ways, and some of it is based on our choices or our ways of reacting to these things. And so saying the great director is a way of saying, well, who have you signed? What movie have you signed on to? What kind of performance do you think you're playing? Who is directing you? Why do you feel you need to listen to this person, whatever, you know, or being, or whatever it might be?
My guest is James Franco, who's written a novel called Actors Anonymous. It's published by Little A. Well, but you've taken directing seriously. The old joke in Hollywood was that everybody wanted to direct. You actually have directed on top of continuing an acting career. Many actors have written fiction later in their lives because they understand that whole process of getting into a character. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it all relatively young, and you have adapted a William Faulkner 1930 novel, one of the most difficult novels I ever tried to read, As I Lay Dying. Now, people have called it unfilmable because so much of Faulkner's fiction is about the language. Were they all wrong?
Well, No. In one sense, they are not wrong. What I think that they're pointing out is when they say unfilmable, or what people are talking about when they say the old adage that a bad book makes a great movie and a good book will make a bad movie. What that, I think, is getting at is what we love about what we call great books often is the language, the writing, the intricacies of all of that.
But this is also largely about stream of consciousness, interior monologue,
right.
which
right.
leads to a lot of voiceover in a lot of movies. You have a little bit
right.
of that, but
right. So I'm so
you can't make a whole movie with a voiceover.
Right. So the two, I think, most important aspects of the novel as L.A. Dying are that each chapter is told from a different character in first person.
15 different characters.
And they, yeah, and they recur, and, you know, the son Darl will tell one chapter, and then the sister Dewey Dell will tell a chapter, and then Cash will tell a chapter, and then he'll come back to Darl, et cetera. So, but they're all more or less picking up where the last person left off. So they're all telling the same story. Along the way, they each tell their own little dramas. You know, one of them is trying to get an abortion. One of them cares about his tools. One of them cares about his horse. You know, they all have their own little things. So I thought that multi-perspectival kind of approach was important, that if I was going to adapt a novel, it wasn't just capturing the story, but it was capturing that, the structure. And then also the interior monologues, like you're talking about. What the way the book works is, on the surface, they speak like early 20th century farmers in Mississippi. You know, it's not very complicated diction, and, you know, it's not he's not using the typical Faulknerian kind of run-on sentences. But then when they all have interior monologues. And in the interior monologues, they use very high diction, involuted prose, and just goes on and on. And some of the ideas they're grappling with are, I think, beyond, or at least the way that they're articulated is beyond what these characters would be capable of. So it's as if Faulkner's giving voice not to their actual thoughts, but maybe to their feelings. So I had to capture all of that. So long story short, I came across the idea of using split screen to give a feeling of multiple perspectives working at once. And then we did use voiceover, but in a way that was unusual, almost a technique almost stolen from reality television, where they have the confessionals. And after reading the book several times, thinking about the film, I thought, these interior monologues are like the confessionals on reality shows. I had the characters speak directly to the camera.
Well, you also, as I understand, have just finished shooting The Sound and the Fury. And since the opening chapter of that book is, as Shakespeare said, a tale told by an idiot, how do you plan to deal with that on a cinematic level?
Right. So in the same way, I felt that... if I'm going to take this book on, I can't just take on the story. It's if I just took on the story, it would just be kind of a melodrama about a family falling apart.
So do you have Benji talking directly to the camera?
No. We did it a little differently in this one. So it's always – the style is always dictated by the source. So in Sound and the Fury, what happens is – Benji, the first speaker, and there's four sections. The first three told by the three different brothers, and the last one is objective. And so Benji, in Benji's section, what happens in the book is he is not really aware of time. He's this mentally challenged character who the family keeps at home. So his whole world is the house and the grounds around the house.
And a lot of gossip in his chapter.
Yeah, so he's piled on all these memories. And like Proust, who Faulkner was a fan of, when he comes across an object or a smell or a sound that reminds him of a memory, it just, in the book, it just transitions immediately to that previous time period. And so we do that. We take that on. And so it jumps around. But where in the book, I think it's hard for first-time readers to follow, because although there is warning that the period is changing, it doesn't tell you, unless you pick up the cues, what period of time it's jumping back to. So it could be, you know, jumping from 1928 to 1902 or to 1910 or whatever. So you don't know in the book. But in the movie, you will see everything. So you'll see, oh, it's the younger version of the character. I know what period we're in. Oh, he's wearing those clothes. Oh, this is happening.
His hair is different. Yeah. We have very little time, but you are working with the same actors in most of these projects. Tim Blake Nelson, who plays Ants Bundren.
Yeah, Tim's been in four of my movies. He plays
Ants Bundren. Child of God, The Sound of Fury.
He played the sheriff in Child of God.
You're going to put together a company of actors?
Father of Child, Charles Bukowski in Bukowski and the father in Sound of the Fury.
He gave him back his teeth in most of those movies.
He's my man. I have a group of actors that I work with, and I've just found that loyalty and passion are some of the most important things to me, and so I just continue working with them.
As I Lay Dying is currently playing at the AMC Empire 25 on West 42nd Street. The novel Actors Anonymous is published by Little A New Harvest. Thank you, James Franco, for being on our show.
That was fun. Thank you.